Without further ado, we go to our fish expert, a local Flatbush resident, a Muslim from Yeshivas Rabbein of Chaim Berlin, a Rav Chaim Goldberg Shlita.
The schuss of davening in a very chashuv shul Friday night. All the shuls in Flatbush are chashuv shuls, but punkt I happen to daven in a chashuv shul just like everybody else at Flatbush.
Can't hear.
I should talk louder? You asked for it. Into the mic. Okay. So the Rav of the shul where I daven, when I came to give him good shabbos, asked me if I'm going to be speaking about the bugs in the fish when I get here. And I assured him, as I assured Rabbi Grossman, that this presentation will be Noki Mikol Chashash Toiloyim. I have nothing to say more than Rabelski said already about the Toiloyim. And the few people in shul who heard me say that proceeded to comment. So if you're not talking about the bugs, then what else is there to talk about? And that is exactly what we're here to talk about. So they say a story. Maisa Bucha, the Chacham Echad, who lived his entire life, Ba'ilam Azeh, B'Kedushu, B'Tahara, Ba'pod Gemura, B'Frat, on his Achilo. If he heard of a Chumra, if there was a Chumra that he could be Choshish for, that Anche Knesset Gedolah couldn't have thought of a Zah Chumra, this fellow was Mekayim it on himself, in order that any Chashash that a person could be Choshish to then be Choshish one day for such a Gitzer, he was Mafrish himself from, and he lived his life Be'emes in such a oifen that he wouldn't eat anything that had even the most distant concern of a dvar eser associated with it. So, Lachem Meiv Esrim, this fellow was zeicha to no less than Moshe Rabbeinu himself coming to be makabel upon him and to be machnas him into the suda that was prepared for the tzaddikim. So he brings the fellow into the suda and he sits him down and everybody starts to partake of the suda, and this fellow is stroking his beard very nicely and quietly. So Moshe Rabbeinu looks to the fellow and he says to him, "You're not eating?" So finally says to him, "What's the problem?" So he said, "I just want to know, who's the Rav HaMachshir over here?" So he says, "Who's the Rav HaMachshir? Look, it's the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's the Rabbeinu Shalom." "Oh, fine." A few minutes later, Vaita, his hand is on his beard and not on his fork. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, "Who's the Mashkiach?" "Who's the Mashkiach? Me, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm the Mashkiach. How much better could you ask for in the world?" "Okay, fine. Just asking." So his hand goes back to the beard, and he still hasn't touched the fork yet. A few minutes later, he asks him. So he said, "Just wondering, who's the Sheikhid?" "So the Sheikhid? You heard of Aaron HaKain? He knows the Malacha. It's Aaron HaKain Shechita." So, fight there a few more minutes, the hand's still on the beard. So he turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, "You wouldn't be insulted if I asked for the fish, would you?" And unfortunately, there is such a musig in the world that if you're not so sure what's doing in this place with the meat, so you go to the fish, and if you're with the fish, you're 100% covered. So I want to tell you a mice that happened. Probably now, it's probably about a year ago. A chaver of mine here in New York told me a mice that happened to him. He was giving hashgacha on an event at a hotel, which he kashered, and it was under his hashgacha. And he happened to have been davening mincha in the hallway of this hotel, along with a bunch of other chashur rabbonim. They were davening mincha in the hallway. And during mincha, he noticed a worker from the kitchen walk into the kitchen with a plastic bag in his hand. Seemed a little bit funny, what's a worker coming in with a plastic bag? You realize that normally when you're making an event in a hotel, whatever you order comes by the case, or by the tens of cases, or by the hundreds of cases. A guy walking in with one plastic bag, something schmeckt the shtickle not right. He finished davening mincha. After mincha, he walked into the kitchen. He went to go speak to the caterer, who was himself from a yid, an elch, a fellow, a decent man. He went over to the caterer and he said to him, "What's doing this? I saw one of your workers, not Jewish, come into the kitchen with a plastic bag." So he said, "Yeah, in a chanami." "So what was in the bag?" He said, "It was whitefish." "So whitefish, what happened?" He said, "There was a bunch of people who asked for the fish, and we weren't prepared that so many people were going to ask that they could have the fish instead of the meat. So I ran out of fish. So what should I do? I should tell the people that wanted fish, I'm sorry, I'm not prepared for you. So I sent the goy to the store to come back and buy some white fish. So the fellow said, that's a lot of work to sit there in the kitchen and to start skinning and filleting all these white fish. How do you have the time for that? He said, you're right, I don't have the time for that. I told the guy when he goes to the store that he should have them fillet it and skin it over there in the store and come back with the fish because, you know, I don't have time for this. So this was, once again, an Erlicha caterer, assuming there was such a thing. There was an Erlicha caterer who entered the MS to the Rav HaMasha, B'sholem B'tu Levav, not trying to pull any shtick, not amazed, not because of the monetary benefit, just push it, a chisorin yidio. And machmas that chisorin yidio, he was kemat macha Yisrael, iser, a shayla iser derabonar iser derai, so we could talk about that at a different time maybe. But the Olam should not go into a situation thinking that if you're eating the fish, one thing is for sure is that you're eating the fish, you're 100% covered. Because the chances of something going wrong with meat when all the parties involved are trying to do the right thing, the chances of something going wrong are very, very low. And unfortunately, in the arena of fish, the OU has not sent me to quite nearly enough places to give this demonstration and to explain why it's not so posh it that everyone who's involved in anything with a supervision, automatically you can trust him on the fish. In fact, I went to a chasana once where I wasn't so happy with the Rav Maksher, and I told one of the guys I want to speak to the mashgiach in the kitchen. So the mashgiach comes out. So I introduced myself, and I said to him, I just want to ask you a question, and he knew what I was going to ask. And I said to him, where does the fish come from? And the guy was in Shtein. In the 40-something years that he had worked as a mashgiach at this place that serves both meat and fish, not one person ever thought to ask him, and where does the fish come from? So he was ready with his BlackBerry in his hand to show me the list of suppliers and all the different products that he gets from the meat supplier, knowing he's getting called out. What would you be calling him out for if obviously you want to know about the meat? And here I am asking about the fish. So I really caught him off guard. And Baruch Hashem, he was able to produce and prove exactly where he got his fish from. And in fact, it was a reliable, acceptable source. So let's start from the beginning. Why do I think most people make mistakes when it comes to the kashrus of fish? Because a lot of things in the world that seem overly simple are those things that get most often destroyed. For example, how easy is it for a person to get married? He takes a shelf of pruta, he goes over to a pnuya, he hands it to her, maybe he needs it, maybe he doesn't need it, it's a very simple thing. But if you ask people who are involved in the union of shalom bias, maintaining a marriage is nowhere near as simple as it is, as it looks, at least from the textbook definition of how do you make a marriage. You make a marriage, you took the ring, you handed it to the girl, you said, Hariya Mikadesha, she was Makablet, you're done, you're married, now it's perfect. It's very, very simple, right? Ask any Rav who's involved in Shalom Bias. Marriage is very, very simple. You gave her the ring, everything is perfect, just now, right? So the Olam knows that by Dogim, the halacha is Simon Mafurish Batoira, any fish which has fins and scales is kosher. And now the rabbi from the OU gets up and tells you that is not true. That is not true. There are fish with fins and scales that are not kosher. Now, how do you say that? The answer is that fins and scales are not snapper v'kaskasas. What do I mean they're not snapper v'kaskasas? I'll give you an example. I once got a phone call from a fellow who sounded pretty chashuv, who was asking a question about a certain fish. And he starts quoting me rayas from Chuvah's farm, complicated places, diukim that he had. And what was he messiahing his question with? He wants to know why I told somebody that shark is not kosher. He looked it up in Encyclopedia Britannica, and to state that in an Encyclopedia Britannica, that shark has fins and scales. So how dare I get up and be soyser Encyclopedia Britannica and say that it's not a kosher fish? I said, I wasn't soyser your Encyclopedia Britannica, a ki hu zeh. It does have fins and scales, but it doesn't have snapper v'kaskasas. Why? First place we see it is in Ramban and Chumash. On Pasuk in Parsha Shemini, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Tes. The Ramban says, what is kaskeses? Kaskeses is scales that can be removed from the fish without ripping the skin. Thus haste. For example, a shark, which has placoid scales, which cannot be removed from the fish without ripping the skin because of the way that the joints between one skin and the other are connected on the shark. It's impossible to remove one without ripping the skin and trying to remove it. By definition, a shark who has those kind of scales cannot be a kosher fish. You cannot remove those scales without ripping the skin. I'll give you another example. There's a fish called eel. Some eel have no scales, but there are some eel that have scales. Those eel which have scales have cycloid scales, which you may have seen on the internet. Cycloid is one of the two types of scales, which if you'll find a fish has cycloid scales or stenoid scales, those are the two types of scales which are ungenumen, that that means it's a kosher fish. So it has cycloid scales, it's kosher. And that's also sheker. That's also sheker because eel that have scales have cycloid scales, little round scales. And those scales are almost always, to the best of my knowledge, always embedded. Thus, they are subcutaneous underneath the skin. And the only way to get to a scale underneath the skin is by ripping the skin. So if, again, if you would be relying on the word placoid to define a scale as being kosher, if you would be relying on finding an expert describing a fish as having fins and scales to decide that it's kosher, you'd be in serious trouble. You would be involving yourself in the sedereisa of a dog tamar. The definition of a kosher fish, once again, is a fish which has fins and scales which can be removed without ripping the skin. Now, for the rest of this presentation, we will not be discussing the fins except with Islamid, only because it's not nogei l'maisa. Because the Gemara already says, and it's ungepasht in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Pei Gimel, that any fish which has kaskeses will have snapir. Meaning, any fish which has scales that can be removed without ripping the skin will automatically have a snapir. So, for example, if a person would go to the store and he would buy a piece of tilapia like this, where all he could see on it is a piece of skin, something we call in industry a skin tab, a tab of skin, and he's able to find a kaskeses on a piece of fish like this, even though there's no fin anywhere in sight, that's not a problem. He can still determine the kosher status of this fish just by finding one kaskeses somewhere on this tag of skin. Once mentioned this at a demonstration in a different neighborhood. And afterward, the fellow came over to me to give me a big shkoyach because he thought that the guy in his local fish store was just lazy. He couldn't imagine how the guy got most of the skin off of the piece of tilapia and not every single piece of tilapia. The guy was so lazy, he wouldn't take off that last stickle of skin, and he thought it was very, very annoying. So now that I explained to him what the concern is, so much more understandable. And in fact, because we can recognize what fish this is based on this patch of skin, person familiar with tilapia can tell you that this is tilapia. I can tell you for a fact this is a tilapia. Because of that, many ashkachas will not require a mashkiach tamidi in the factory, which is processing this fish, because this isn't kirvei dogim. This is not a fish which can't be identified when it comes back into Jewish hands, because we're able to identify it simply by recognizing the look of the skin. Not the meat, but the skin on the part of the fish. Okay? So by recognizing, having a tvias ayin on this part of the skin, one can be makir that this is a daktar, and many places rely on that patch of skin to not require a mashkiach tamidi to be in the facility where it's processed. In the example of tilapia, that is very pertinent because it's estimated that 80% of the tilapia found in the United States comes from China. And for those people who are familiar with airline travel, it's very expensive and costly, difficult to send mashgichim to China to do productions, and if there's a way to potentially avoid it, so many hashgachas will avail themselves of that and will allow a company to produce their fish with a patch of skin on it, and with that patch of skin, we can come to be makir what the fish is. So what if I tell you that a fish, as far as textbook is concerned, has snapir v'kaskeses, but when I go into the fish store, it's already skinned. The skin was completely removed. Yeah? So what should I do then? How can I know that in fact this is a kosher fish? Yeah? And the answer is, for the most part, you cannot. There have been many meisim where somebody claims that he has such a tvias ayin on the meat of the fish that simply by looking on a piece of fish, he can tell you exactly which species it is. And if you're Zaycha, Rabbi Belsky will regale you with some of his stories of people that tried to do that and how he proved them wrong. Because even the biggest mumchim, or at least people who claim to be from the biggest mumchim around, who can recognize what a fish is just by looking at a piece of skinless meat, have been proven wrong. Because it's very, very simple for a person to look at a piece of fish and think he knows what he's looking at, and in fact he has no idea what he's looking at all. If anyone can take a look at the fish that I have in my hand right here. So normally if I would do this presentation in a classroom of 20 or 30 people, I would ask for volunteers of what people think the fish I'm holding up is, it's a little bit impossible with such a large crowd, Baruch Hashem. So think in your own mind what fish this looks like. Yeah? Maybe you've seen flounder. Maybe you've seen tilapia, cod, sole. Yeah, you're allowed to think whatever you want. This, in fact, is something called swai. Swai is one of many market names. You might, in some neighborhoods, find it called panga. You might find it called basa. You might find it called tra. You might find it called China sole. Or you might even have it called grouper. This, in fact, is a catfish from Vietnam. Actually, this one came from Cambodia. And it's not kosher. This is a dug tummy. This is Nisidi Raisa Lochanaladeus. A kazayas of this is a Hiv Malkus. Less mandapoli. And if you went into a fish store and a fellow handed you what he told you was flounder, or he told you was whitefish, or he told you was sole, or he told you was something else, you might very well believe him. And that's exactly why they do it. And that's why your friends at the FDA, from as far back as 1995 that I'm aware of, made a point of being medea the public, zolvesin, that you should not be samach on us. You should know, we, your friends at FDA, are not going to promise you species integrity. We are not going to monitor, and we are definitely not going to guarantee that the species of fish which you receive is the one which you think you're buying from the fish store. And why? Because FDA says, look, we got a lot of things on our plate. We've got doctored dog food coming from China. We've got toys. We've got baby formula that's going to potentially kill you. We've got toothpaste to deal with. We've got plenty of issues of pikuach nefashos involved. And quite frankly, this is only something we consider economic fraud. And the FDA made a point of being medea the oilam about this. I have the article from, I think it was 1995. They were specifically worried about a fish called red snapper, which under American law, only one certain species of snapper caught in the Gulf of Mexico can be called red snapper, even though there's lots of fish that are snappers that look just like red snapper. But emes a red snapper is very expensive. And because of that, the fishmongers were regularly substituting cheaper species of snapper. So they just wanted to be medea the oilam. You should know, go to a fish store that you trust. You know, as Ovi the Ababi always told you, don't shop by people because you think somebody else is taking care of you. You develop a relationship with somebody. You know that fellow. You trust him. He knows you. He's not going to mess you up. That's who you should shop from. That's what FDA recommends. In 2002, the Congress got involved in a very interesting sugya of biology, namely taxonomy. Now, if any of you here are wondering what members of Congress are doing involving themselves in the science of how one comes to classify a species of fish, you'd probably be right in thinking that there was something funny going on, and I will tell you some of the background story. In 2002, the Southern Catfish Farmers Lobbying Group approached their local members of Congress with the following dilemma. There is a catfish coming from Southeast Asia that is being produced at a fraction of the cost of what it takes for us to produce catfish here in the United States. The fish looks identical, tastes identical, and as far as the places which purchase catfish are concerned, is just as good as local catfish. And because of that, we are having quite the time remaining in business, which means we're having quite the time giving contributions to your re-election campaign, which is why you folks need to get involved. So Congress said, what do you want from me? And the catfish farmer said, I have a very good idea. You should legislate that the name of the fish that's allowed to be called catfish in the United States should be ach v'rach, the species of catfish which we raise here in the southern United States. Thus haste, the law will be, you cannot call this fish a catfish unless it's punk the species of catfish which we raise here, and the guys in Southeast Asia don't raise over there. And that way, it'll be illegal to even bring that fish into the United States, and we'll slap a 50% duty on that fish coming in, so that even if they would try to bring it in under their old name, you'll have to pay a ridiculous duty to get it in, which will basically even the playing field. So Congress got into the business of taxonomy, and Congress paskin that in order to be called a catfish in the United States, it has to be the genus and species raised in the Mississippi Gulf area and the other parts of the South where catfish is raised. Now, you would imagine that the Southeast Asian catfish farmers would just decide, oh, well, if there's no market for us in the United States, we'll just pack up and go about selling bubble gum on street corners because, you know, no one's going to buy our catfish in the United States, So we'll just close up shop, throw away all our fish farms, and, you know, move into another geschäft. Maybe we'll open a hedge fund. Yeah? But in fact, they didn't open hedge funds. They had a much better business idea. They decided to take their catfish, some of them, the most unscrupulous among them, took their catfish and relabeled it grouper. Now, what do you have over here? Watch this. If anyone here is from Florida and you say the word grouper, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, because grouper might as well be the official state fish of Florida. I don't know if it is or not, but one thing is sure. In the state of Florida, grouper is being sold in everything from what they call fish shacks, you know, the places that you'll pass on the highway offering $1.99 fish sandwiches, and you're thinking, I wish a kosher place could pull off a shtick like that, right? And to, all the way up until the white tablecloth restaurants where the guy comes with the schmata over the arm and speaks to you in French, right? There's grouper from the entire range of culinary tastes. And recently, a group of high school students, it's been done a few times, but it made the news, it was geschmack, because a bunch of high school students for a school project did a DNA test. They sent samples of grouper taken from all over the state of Florida, from the entire range of quality fish restaurants, and they found that 90% of the fish being sold in Florida as grouper was, in fact, catfish. Now, how'd they get away with that? Well, the importers, chap, if they sell it and they tell everybody that it's basa, tra, panga says China sole, or any of the other names which FDA legally allows them to use to market the product, they have to pay a ridiculous duty, and no one wanted to pay it. But if they just are mashana one little itty-bitty insignificant thing on the box, they take out that word catfish and they switch it for the word grouper, then everything will be beseder, because all they do is bring it into the United States, and they approach the distributors of seafood products, and they say, look, your local grouper costs a belt. My grouper from China is very cheap. You do the math, right? And they did. And not only the cheap places that were looking for the cheapest fish they could get, but even the higher quality restaurants also fell for it, because they were also looking to watch their bottom line. Yeah? And for a fact, up to, again, 90% of the fish in that sample that were sold as grouper, by the way, grouper doesn't look anything like this, which was the biggest kiddush to me. If you look at a piece of grouper, a piece of skinless grouper, it doesn't look anything like a piece of skinless basa, tra, panga, swai, or whatever. But somehow even the restaurants with the fancy chefs that their reputation is gold got fooled. After I gave this presentation once, it was posted on the internet, I got an email from a lady who told me that she was wondering why grouper never tasted the same as it did years back. She noticed that something was tefeltepis in the grouper lately, and now that she found out what the story was. And there was a recent, so you'll say that was Florida. Very nice, Florida. You go to Florida for the winter, but then we come back to New York, we eat kosher, right? So it was recently a story in NewJersey.com, NJ.com. It was only recently over there because a chaver of mine sent me the story when the fellow got convicted and sentenced to prison for doing the same thing right here in New Jersey, Port of Newark. Yeah? Meisim b'chol yom. And that's why you have to be careful. So just watching the name and knowing that grouper is a name that's always associated with a kosher fish doesn't do anything for you. Because, again, once the skin is off, it lost its social security number, it lost its driver's license. It's a major case of identity fraud right here. So the guy I bought this from actually legally called it swai, which is one of the legal market names for the fish. But you can find it in plenty of other places under lots of different names. So now what do you do? Well, hopefully the Rav Master in your local fish store is knowledgeable of what his mashgiach is expected to look for, and he makes sure to be moidiyah the mashgiach to check when the fish come in that either they came in from a place where it was the skin was removed under hashgacha tamidis, or he tells his mashgiach to either remove the skin under hashgacha tamidis or himself just to check that it's a kosher fish before he puts it out into the fish counter. Yeah. For the most part, it seems that in fact is the case. And again, so a product like this, which would have a patch of skin. So the mashgiach could potentially tell, the mashgiach could tell that this is tilapia, again, just by looking at the fish. What about in a case where the scales fall off? So the halacha is that a fish which had scales any point during its life, sigh if it's going to have scales later in life, sigh if it had scales already and those scales fell out, that is a kosher fish. And one popular example of that, for those of you who've been to a kiddush in Flatbush lately, is this. Right? Herring. You know, it's funny. I've done this demonstration all the way from Little Rock, Arkansas up to Boston and points in between, and I've yet to have anyone look at this and say, are you sure that also isn't catfish? Not one time. And why is that? Because on herring, the average American, for sure the average from a Yid, has a tfiyas ayin, meaning he's able to look at this fish and recognize what it is right away. So sometimes people ask me when I tell them that a mashgiach could have a tfiyas ayin on something like tilapia, rabbi, who could possibly recognize a fish just by looking at the skin? And then we whip out a piece of herring. Yeah? And it was an aboyad ifshita. That was the answer to the question. This is a fish that you can recognize just by looking at the skin. And the reason you need to recognize it by looking at the skin is because for the most part, the scales of the herring fall out. Interesting side note, I was in a herring factory in New Brunswick, Canada, the last sardine packing plant in Canada. For those of you who have been following the news, the second to last one, the last one in the United States closed down last week. And there's only one that I'm aware of. Actually, not true. There's a few sardine canning factories in Canada. But this is the sister plant of the one that closed up in Maine. That when I visited this factory, I asked them to see the fish, and I wanted to find the cascasset on the fish. So the woman gave me a couple just to wash so she could spiel this with me a little bit. So I'm playing with the fish, and I'm not finding any scales anywhere on any of these sardines / herring. By the way, they're one and the same. Sardine is just a smaller fish of the same species, same cupiform family, same. It's just a matter of the size, legally, if you're allowed to call it a sardine or a herring. So I looked for it, couldn't find scales, and the regular mashgiach decided to let me go through this just so he could, you know, have his fun too. And when I was done, I said, you know, we have a big problem over here. I'm ready to put out a kol kair until Rabbi Belsky told me you're not allowed to do that. That herring must be trafe because I looked at it, there isn't a scale to be found anywhere on this field. So how do we do that? So they told me, Rabbi Goldberg, the scales of the herring fall off when it comes out of the water. So I said to him, so that must make the boat pretty dirty, right? She goes, oh yeah, that's a mess. We wouldn't want to be there at all. So I asked, what do you do with all those scales, just out of curiosity? Do you send them to animal feed, like with other fish garbage? She said, oh no, we've got a much more valuable use for herring scales than that. I said, really? What do you do with herring scales? So we send them to the cosmetics industry. And now there's a groan from upstairs, okay? And I said, well, what does the cosmetic industry do with them, right? He said, you ever notice sometimes makeup with a little shiny zachdarten that you put the makeup on and you see it's a little bit shiny, right? That's a chemical called brilliant sheen, and it's derived from the scales of herring. Right. Another screen upstairs. So when I gave this demonstration in Chaim Berlin, there's a bacher who was here before who remembers me doing it. I told the boys that when you come home, if you happen to notice that your mother is wearing makeup, you should go, it smells like herring around here, and just walk away. And I know for a fact that at least one fellow did it, because when I went to shul that night, a chaver came over to me and said, so, my son walks over to my wife and says she smells like herring, and we had quite the fun today. So it's true. It's true. Okay, so what happens if you go into a fish store? If you're living out of town, this is Maisim B'chol Yoyim. It's a sad thing. I once wrote an article for Hamadiyah about this, that it's a sad thing that it should be that Achinu B'nai Yisrael that live out of town should be more aware of certain halachas than we that are zeichet to all the conveniences of living with kosher everything as far as the eye can see. And out of town, it's a normal thing for a person to go to a non-certified fish store because a lot of times there is no kosher fish store. And you have to know the halachas yourself, how to determine which is a kosher fish and how to have the fellow in the store prepare it for you so you can eat it when you come home. So let's pretend for a minute that we were all living in the middle of Little Rock, Arkansas, and there is no kosher fish store. And you were going into a fish market and you had to determine if this fish, which happens to be a snapper, no relationship to the snapper. Rashi in Nida Daf Nun Aleph from Beis says that the snapper, he describes the snapper as being like kanafayim, like wings. So Pashtus, that's referring to the pectoral fins right here. So I said I'm only going to say fins just for the academic reasons behind it. So Rashi seems to say that it's these fins. Other people seem to say that it's the dorsal fin over here along the back. There are anterior fins, anal fins, and of course the tail fin. The tail fin is definitely not the snapper. I could prove that, but I'm not going to talk about that right now. What you would do in order to find out that this is a kosher fish is you would have to find a kaskeses on the body of the fish. Yeah. The Ramah warns, based on a Tosefta, that you should not just find a scale, for example. If you can see right over here, I pulled a loose scale from the top of the fish. That scale, okay, see my finger? I'm trying to find my camera. Oh, there you go. Okay, if you can see that. This scale is not the scale we're going to rely on to know it's a kosher fish because it was loose on the top. And it's very possible that this fish was zeichet to a shachin toiv. And his next door neighbor may very well have been a shedding kosher fish. And he picked it up. Toiv l'tzadik, toiv l'shchina, right? So what we're going to need to do is to find a scale on this fish, which is either clearly from the fish, which means it's not loose sitting on top, there's a bunch of loose scales on it, or we're going to look in one of three places. We're going to look by the tail. You got me? There we go. You're going to look by the tail. Oh, here, there's a couple. I'm just pulling those off and knocking them down. Okay? You're going to look by the tail. You're going to look by the gills. Yeah? Here's the gills. Okay? So on the back of the gills, you'll see a couple of scales over here. Okay? Or you're going to look along the backbone. And why are these places so muscle to find scales that you can rely on? Because those are places where a fellow is least likely to bump into a good neighbor who's going to make a donation of caskesis. Yeah? So if you're going to look into one of those three areas and you're going to find a caskesis on the fish, you'll be able to know it's a kosher fish. So, just Leval Chedemilsa, he got me. Look at the back. There we go. Here. So now I'm pulling off a couple of caskesis. And in case you didn't trust the fellow in ChapRite, who happens to be a very Eilecha fellow, who helps me out whenever I need fish in a rush because I'm running to a presentation. He always does my orders for me. So a little shout out to him. And in fact, he did his job. This is a kosher snapper. Okay? In addition to things like that, we also have a product like this. This is a Big Eye tuna steak. It happens to be delicious. And it comes from a factory, an OU certified factory. Here, you see? OUP. It comes from an OU factory. There is no mashgiach tamidi in the factory. And how do we know that it's a kosher fish? For those of you who are not familiar with it, right here, can you zoom in on that? Okay. Right here is the patch of fish which the meicher leaves on every piece of tuna. And how does he do that? Because tuna come in quarter loins, meaning they cut the fish from the head towards the tail in quarters. Yeah, the meat naturally falls off the bone that way. And each quarter loin, imagine if you're looking at like two slices of a pizza from top down. That's a quarter of a pie, so it would be a quarter loin going the length of the fish. And what he does is when he has them skin it, he leaves one strip along the side of the quarter loin. And when they cut it into steaks, mamela, there's a little patch of skin left on each steak. Now, it happens to be the first time I bought it. I was very happy. I wanted to show my son, look, this is kosher fish. You shouldn't be choshed your father. I'm feeding you nevelis. Come, I'll show you. And I showed him how to find the scales right here on the tuna, and I mentioned it to the Moichuzah from Yid. And he told me that I lucked out because Big Eye tuna is, again, one of those species in the same clupiform family as herring that drop its scales. So I came this close to embarrassing myself a second time with the fish. I just lucked out. I plunked out from a portion of the belly where the scales hadn't fallen out. Okay, one scale anywhere on the fish, so long as we can prove that it's from this fish. The recommended areas are the tail, along the back, and by the gills. Anytime during its life cycle, it's a kosher fish, so even if you are not yourself able to be makir, let's say, for example, you've never seen herring before. You don't know if herring is a kosher fish, or a much more normal example is with mackerel. Even herring, sometimes you can luck out and you'll find a piece of a scale in the herring. But mackerel, you come out, we'll never find. So how do we have kosher mackerel all over the place? Well, you probably did what I did. You went down to speak to Hillel Levitz at Banner Smoked Fish, and you told him, I want to be makabel musayra on mackerel. So he says, come, I'm going to take you into the refrigerator and show you. And he has a big tub of mackerel sitting in brine, ready to be smoked. And he says, take a look. This is a kosher mackerel. So how do you know? So he was makabel musayra before he started smoking it. So he's makabel musayra, and he's an Eilecha Torah Yid who's familiar with fish. He tells me that this is the mackerel. I study it for long enough that I'm familiar with it. So now, if you line up a bunch of samples of Boston mackerel in front of me, I can pick out which one is the kosher min. And now I'm a bar hachi to give out Masoya to the next fellow to tell him that this is, in fact, a kosher fish. Okay? One thing I try to speak about whenever we get the opportunity. You know what? Before I get to that, let's say you go into the fish store, and it's a fish store which does not have hashgacha. Remember, we're still in Little Rock, Arkansas. The air conditioning is blasting because, you know, here it is in April, so it's got to be about 100 degrees outside. And the fellow in the fish store cut up the fish, and you did not ask him to wash the knife thoroughly before he cut it, and you also didn't make sure that he washed the board thoroughly before he put the fish on it. So now you're calling up Rabbi Goldberg at the OU with tears in the corner of your eye, that what am I about to do to my family? And I bought this fish, and I really wanted to serve it. Now what do we do? Good news. We take our trusty friend, the non-serrated knife. I say non-serrated because Bisman Azeh, it's a common thing to have such a thing called a serrated knife. In the good old days, a serrated knife had a name. It was called garbage. And nowadays, the serrated knife is sometimes preferred. I don't know why. But a non-serrated knife, you take a nice sharp, non-serrated knife, okay? And you take your piece of fish, and you are maver l'chudush al sakin. First, you wash it, okay? We take it for granted that everything gets washed, right? Somebody even said that, bisman hazeh, to tell somebody to wash it is almost like repeating yourself, because of course, before you start with everything, first you wash it, and then we start having a conversation, right? But in case we didn't have it, if it wasn't a given, I'm giving it, yeah? So first thing you do is you're going to wash the fish, not necessarily with soap, just wash it with water. You're going to take the sharp part of your knife, you're going to be mavro lo b'chudosh shel sakin, and just gently scrape along the fish in the areas that the non-kosher knife had cut. Not very much removed. You got me? Where are you? Oh, there you are. You see? Not very much. Yeah? Just to take a little bit of, probably that's the reason to machner. Just taking off a little bit of whatever schmutz might have been left by the non-kosher knife. Okay? Next. We often get the question at the Orthodox Union with a product like, you see I'm pushing banner today? Did you notice? I have a beautiful package of OU certified banner smoked salmon, also available at Chaperone. No, I didn't get commercial plugs from anybody. No, but this beautiful salmon is smoked salmon. And I often get the question, how does the OU deal with bishalakum? So in a factory like Banner, that's not a question. It's owned and operated by Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, so there's no concern. But let's say a factory was not owned and operated by Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, how would I answer them? And the answer is that this product doesn't need Bishal Yisrael because this product is raw. And people say, Rabbi Goldberg, what do you mean the product is raw? Don't you see it says smoked across the top? And the answer is yes, it is smoked. By law, it can't be smoked hotter than 90 degrees Fahrenheit because after 90 degrees Fahrenheit, it starts to develop bacterial load issues, meaning that all the little creepy crawlies that are all over the place will start to make it rot. In addition to that, the protein inside of the fish starts to form something called pellicle, which if you've ever had baked salmon, and you know that texture when salmon starts to crumble when you eat it with a fork, and you notice that lox is kind of rubbery. The reason is because lox has the texture of raw salmon, because it is raw salmon. It's just been soaked in the saltwater brine. Cold smoke has been applied to it. And with that, it tastes like traditional lox. Hot smoked salmon, you'll see it called kippered salmon or hot smoked salmon in the stores. That product has been hot smoked. That product was fully edible. In all cases, it's OU certified. We guarantee that it was fully edible before it came to the smoke step, in which case it was nechel kmo shu chai, and it doesn't require bishul yisrael for that reason. One last very quick thing before I take questions. Sushi. Often out of town we get the question, there's no kosher restaurants, but at least we should chutz be able to buy sushi. My answer is we have a bunch of problems with potentially buying sushi. Number one, the problem is there's no skin on any of the pieces of fish inside the sushi. So how would one know that it's in fact from a kosher fish? That's problem number one. Problem number two, even if you bought where you, for whatever reason, were sure that it was a kosher fish, you also have the problem of the rice. The rice around it, pashtus, was oil al shulchan malachim, and it was not nechel chai, in which case it is shayat bishalakum, and it was not cooked by a Jew, in which case the rice is also. So if you would buy sushi at a non-kosher restaurant, you would throw away the rice, and you would throw away the fish. But you would think, oh, at least I can eat the nori sheet, you know, that little brown, green, whatever, papery thing around it. Actually, you couldn't, because kosher-certified nori, the shrimp and the seahorses, which swim around in the ocean, sometimes get caught in them. Kosher-certified nori has those removed. Non-certified nori does not have those removed, so you'd be eating little buggies if you ate them. So if you'll toss the rice and the fish and the nori, at least you'd have the vegetables, and the answer is you wouldn't, because they're usually soaked in a rice vinegar, which was made from wine, which was the Ayin Nesef pashtus. So the vegetables are now usher also. So you would throw away the rice, you'd throw away the fish, you'd throw away the nori, you'd throw away the vegetables, and you'd be left with the tray, which for shteitzach you would have to wash because it just touched non-kosher sushi.
Rabbi Goldberg, to ask a few questions.
Go ahead.
Why did the sardine factory in Canada close?
It was a sad testimony about the tastes of American customers who have no idea of what good food is, and in fact they're moving on to bigger and better things like sushi instead of sardines.
Why did the salmon need a patch of skin if it is a redfish? Aren't all redfish kosher and don't need a redfish?
I was about to say to get to the other side, but he ended the question differently, right? Okay. I didn't discuss salmon because I didn't have the time, but I'll just briefly mention. OU policy and that of many major hashgachas is that a fish like this, which is red, you can recognize what fish this is without me telling it to you, and I've tried this in grades as young as second, and it's amazing how basically every person who's seen a piece of fish like this looked at it and said, that's salmon. We know what it is, it's salmon. And in fact, it's kosher. the OU would allow this fish to be sold and bought without skin. Baharaya, I bought it, and it doesn't have skin on it. And this fish is 100% not a problem because we have no concern that it's anything but a salmon. We could discuss why we're not concerned about the dyeing it, different colors issue, which we don't have time to discuss right now. Yes.
Why can't we in Brooklyn buy freshwater fish as easily as from Jews in Michigan or Minnesota? What is the problem?
You're perfectly welcome to do so. The problem is if people don't know the halachas, and it's a funny thing, when more than once it happened to me this past Shabbos where people were chepering me, they're, oh, I saw your face in the newspaper, I hear you speaking about fish, what are you going to say about the bugs? It's an unbelievable thing. Ruba de ruba of the people that are talking about fish have no idea that there's some obligation on them to know that it's a kosher fish, other than the fact that the sign says that it's flounder, and everybody knows that flounder is kosher. I want to tell you something. There's no one who's going to guarantee you that every flounder is kosher. I can tell you for a fact, every cod is not kosher. The freshwater cod, it's also called burbot, it's called lota lota, it's called lawyer, it's called ling, it's called lots of different names, is a freshwater fish with embedded scales. And Rebelsky's touched it as well and can confirm to you that those scales are embedded, they're underneath the skin, it's not kosher, and it's legally allowed to be sold as cod. I can't tell you about other fish because there's millions of fish in the sea. I couldn't tell you that every fish called flounder, every fish called sole, was a kosher species of fish. No one could make that statement, and you wouldn't even know if it was, because once again, once the skin is removed, all bets are off.
Final question. Why does kosher canned fish require a kosher symbol, for example, salmon or tuna?
Why does kosher canned fish require hashgacha? So in the example of salmon, so the concern is that maybe the cannery, which is processing the salmon, especially this is the case in Southeast Asia, are often producing animal food, for instance, cat food, on the same lines, or could theoretically produce on the same lines. And in a certified plant, we would guarantee that the systems are such that they can't mish from the animal side to the human side or from the human side to the animal side so that you'd have an integrity of your product. That's one example. We would potentially be dealing with the shilas of bishalak, and we would be dealing with shilas of non-kosher ingredients besides the kalim shilas. When you're buying a can of OU certified fish products, we looked into every issue and we can guarantee that we made sure that it's a kosher product.
Shkoyach Rabbi Chaim Goldberg, thank you very much.